rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And happy Boxing Day! It's the day after Christmas, the 26th of December. We are live. Our telephone number, 866-440-THOM. 440-8466. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room and say hello. John Cox is with us. Oh, today, by the way, yesterday, actually, Christmas Day, if my math is right, I guess I suppose it depends on what part of the world you're in and, you know, when statistics are compiled and released and all that kind of thing, but it appears that yesterday the number of U.S. troops who have died in Iraq, and now I'm not sure if this is Iraq and Afghanistan or just Iraq. I believe it's just Iraq, but I may be wrong, and if I am wrong, I'm sure John will correct me, but nonetheless, the number of troops who have died is equal to the number of people, American troops who have died, is equal to the number of people who died in 9/11. That's a grim milestone. John Cox is with us. He's the first Republican to have declared his candidacy for the 2008 Republican presidential campaign, campaigning out in New Hampshire. John Cox, his website, cox2008.com. John Cox, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be with you, and Merry Christmas to all of your listening audience, as well as the servicemen serving overseas. I'm on the board of the USO in Chicago, so I have some contact with the military, and you're right, it's a very sad milestone we're seeing in Iraq.
Yeah, indeed. And
what do we do about that?
Let's talk about that. And a tip of the hat, by the way, to Al Franken, for whom I'm filling in all this week. We're doing our show is also filling in for his show. And who is still in Iraq with the USO tour.
Hey, so, Tom, you know, instead of cursing the darkness, why don't we light a candle here and figure out a way to get out of here with a victory as well as with our troops intact?
It sounds like a plan, John. You suggest in the article or press release or whatever this is that you sent me, the Iraq Study Group signals withdrawal and failure, that the Iraq Study Group's proposal to have conversations with Iraq and Syria and phase withdrawal is, in other words, quote, surrender and failure.
Well, you know, if you look at the report, and I have read the report, they don't address the economic conditions in Iraq until page 89 of a 100-page report. And this is something that I've been talking about. And it's interesting, Tom. A couple weeks ago, Hillary Clinton and John Ensign, who was a Republican from Nevada, co-authored a piece on the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal addressing something that I've been talking about for 9 months, and that is the absolutely horrific economic circumstances in Iraq. And what does this have to do with people getting killed there, our service people being killed? I think it has a lot to do with it. The unemployment rate is 40, 50, 60% in Baghdad is the estimate. The people there have very little hope. They get electricity 2 or 3 hours a day.
You realize why all this is, John. This is because when Paul Bremer went in, the Bush administration ordered him to change the Iraqi constitution and make the economic rules, the Wolfowitz rules, the conservative rules, flat tax. They did away with the progressive income tax and imposed a flat 15% income tax, allow corporations to hire anybody they want. But no longer do you have to hire citizens first, like here in the United States, where people who come into the country are considered illegal immigrants if they don't have a permit. Allowed corporations to bring in people from any place in the world, threw open their borders, did away with all duties, and shut down over 200 state-owned industries, hoping to privatize them. This economic paradise has brought an economic disaster.
The clearest mistake that was made, and I think there are people out there who acknowledge it. I saw an interview on, I think it was C-SPAN, with Jay Garner, who was the first administrator, as you remember, for the first couple of months.
He was the guy who wanted to have elections, and Bush got him out of there as soon as he started talking about elections and said, no, we're going to bring Bremer in, and he's going to do...
More important, Tom, he's a guy that wanted to employ the old Iraqis, the old Baathists, and he wanted to keep the military intact, and that's something that they decided, that somebody at the Pentagon decided was not a good thing. Hey, Tom, listen, I think everybody looks back now and says that definitely there were mistakes made. The issue now, though, is, having said all that, what's the proper response today? Is it to just pull out everything with our tail between our legs and allow the 150 billion barrels of oil to just be there waiting for the next terrorist group to take advantage of? Or should we do something that's going to secure the area as well as, frankly, our security in the future? And I'd like to go with the latter. I'd like to see Iraq as a prosperous, wealthy, Democrat, you know, ally for us.
Now, you suggest that there's only two options, that the oil falls into the hands of terrorists or that the oil is in our hands. In fact, in your article, you say the substantial risk is that this country and its sizable oil reserves will fall under the influence and control of forces opposed to freedom and opposed to us.
See, I'm not talking about our hands, Tom. I'm talking about in the hands of the Iraqis. I want that oil put on the market where it will be bought by the Chinese, it'll be bought by us, it'll be bought by a whole bunch of people around the world. It's a fungible commodity. I'm not talking about us stealing the oil.
Right. So if we get out of there and the Iraqis take over Iraq, I mean, we're buying oil right now from Iran. We're buying things from China.
Not. The rest of the world is buying it from Iran. We're not buying it, but it's all fungible. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And we're well, and it's not like we don't like communist dictatorships. I mean, you know, walk into any Walmart. The fact of the matter is that if we got out of there tomorrow, no matter who ends up controlling Iraq, that oil is going to be available to us. Why should we sacrifice more lives, particularly our own soldiers' lives, although now it appears that the military is saying...
Well, Tom, you and I aren't smart enough to figure out what the next regime is going to be in Iraq. I mean, it could be a theocracy along the lines of the Iranians, or it could be some other kind of strong man that comes into play, like a Saddam, or worse. We don't know what's going to happen there. And the issue is, democracies tend to be a little bit more peaceful because their people will not stand for aggressive tactics. I mean, you saw what happened in our own elections on November 7th. People voted against aggressive tactics. And so, you know, I think it's a good idea to get democracy into that part of the world.
If, John, I'm not disagreeing with you, but one of the core predicates for democracy is a middle class. And by L. Paul Bremer going in and imposing, you know, Wolfowitz, Feith, Bush, Cheney economics, right-wing economics, conservative economics on Iraq, we have wiped out their middle class. Over 2 million people have fled. You have, as you pointed out, these huge unemployment rates. There is no middle class there. And without a middle class, when you have democratic elections, the people who get elected, and I mean, you want to see evidence of this, look at the Palestinian territories, the people who get elected are the people who are willing to speak the loudest, be the most bellicose, be the most, make the biggest promises.
I'm going to surprise you. I agree with you. I think that there should be a middle class. I think people ought to be empowered, just like there ought to be more empowerment to the middle class in America, which is a large part of what my campaign is about.
So, how do we do this in Iraq, John?
Well, I understand. I'm talking
about... If you were president, what would you do?
Small business. Well, what would I do? I would take the oil royalties, I would take the oil fields, I'd put them into a privately held companies, and I'd give every person in Iraq and create a middle class in Iraq by giving them a stake in their oil business. And so they would have assets, and of course there'd be a lot of rules about whether they could sell them or not, and whether, you know, they could, you want to make
You're
sure
a socialist, John.
No, it's not socialism, it's capitalism. I'm talking about giving people
ownership.
Well,
if we did that here in the United States, if we said, you know, all that oil under the ground in Texas actually belongs to the people of Texas.
We have that already, Tom. It's called Exxon Mobil. It's called BP Amoco. It's called a lot of companies.
Okay, so you're saying a private corporation should own the oil in Texas, in Iraq, just like it does in
Texas. I'm saying that it would be a good idea to have private companies that compete with each other, that employ Iraqis. At the same time, I think more policies that are derived at opening things up for a middle class to small business to operate. And I think that's what those five Wolfowitz policies you're talking about that you're deriding so much, I think those are the kind of policies that are necessary in America as well as there. And those are things that empower the middle class, that empower people to form their own small businesses and provide for themselves, not government handouts, but small businesses like the ones I run that allow people to empower themselves.
And how are you going to get small businesses like the one you run, John Cox? Cox2008.com, by the way. John Cox, the first declared Republican presidential candidate. How are you going to get small businesses like the one you run when we have altered the Constitution in Iraq to basically hand it over to large multinational corporations like it's happening here in the United States?
Well,
and this is the work of the Republicans.
I'm not convinced that the Constitution is totally geared at large multinational companies. So you're going to have to prove that to me. But how do you do that? I think you do that with education. I think you do that with getting infrastructure built in that country. I mean, when you have the electricity only on.
But that's why we're giving all that money to Halliburton and Bechtel, is to build the infrastructure.
Well, I think that's necessary, Tom. I think you have to build roads. I think you have to build
schools. So we have to give more money to Halliburton and Bechtel.
No, I think the Iraqis should be doing these things. And if they have to hire... If they hire Schlumberger as opposed to Halliburton or Bechtel, I don't care who they hire as long as they actually want.
So you think we should just give the money that we're giving to Halliburton and Bechtel to the Iraqi government and say, you guys hire the job?
I think there should be procedures, obviously, to make sure it's not stolen and make sure that people do a quality job. And I think that's, you know, we've got some of the best business minds in the world in the United States. And, of course, the Europeans have great business
minds. So we should run the show.
We can all get together and design some systems that allow the money to be spent in a quality fashion without the corruption that's going on there. I think that's a big thing.
Interesting. John Cox, Cox2008.com, his website, the first Republican presidential candidate. John, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
This is... Opposition, like the Rainbow Coalition, the same voice in the wilderness of war. And we were winning as dissenters when we called our representatives, but they fixed the game and lied about the score. Will this I know?
Yes, I know.
Will this I know?
Yes, I know.
Will humanity may never sunk so low? Will there not be a solution? Let's bring on the revolution, cause the royal oligarchy's got to go.
Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. What's the solution? Well, you know, obviously in my mind, the solution in Iraq, A, we never should have been there in the first place. This was an absolutely wrong war from the get-go. And by the way, happy Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, the 26th of December. Just a little tip, by the way, if you have not yet seen the movie The Good Shepherd, or if you have, you think back, you know, the first third of the movie, and I'm not giving away the movie at all. This will actually make the movie more interesting if you haven't seen it yet. First third of the movie is about trying to figure out who's the guy inside the CIA, or who's the guy inside, inside the Bay of Pigs invasion, also known as Operation Zapata. Who is the guy in Operation Zapata who ratted out Operation Zapata to the Soviets, who then told Castro so that he was able to shoot the guys down, the B-29s, the air support that Kennedy provided, thus trapping the guys at the Bay of Pigs? It made Kennedy look bad. Who betrayed us to the Soviets in order to make Kennedy look bad? In Operation Zapata. That's one of the big questions, the first third of the movie. One of the things they don't point out is that Zapata Oil Company was owned by George Herbert Walker Bush at the time, a Skull and Bones member and Yale graduate, who later became director of the CIA. That Zapata Oil had never found any oil, that they may have had offshore drilling operations near Cuba, great lifting stations, and that the two ships that brought the guys to the Bay of Pigs, the Barbara J and the Houston. Interesting. So could it have been George Herbert Walker Bush who ratted out Operation Zapata to the Soviets in order to make Kennedy look bad? I don't know. But I have a feeling the movie will take on a new significance to you when you go see it, if you go see it, The Good Shepherd. Our telephone number, 866-440-8466. We're live today. We're live all this week. Actually, yesterday was the best of show, but we're back. And we were just talking with John Cox, the first declared Republican candidate for President of the United States in 2008. The armed forces, this from the Boston Globe today, the armed forces, already struggling to meet recruiting goals, are considering expanding the number of non-citizens in the ranks. Are we going to do what the French Foreign Legion has done? Is that how bad it's gotten? The French Foreign Legion, of course, had to do this because France was an empire and Frenchmen not so interested in fighting for empire. They would defend their homeland, but empire? Nah. The armed forces, already struggling to meet recruiting goals, are considering expanding the number of non-citizens in the rank, including proposals to open recruiting stations overseas and put more immigrants on a faster track to U.S. citizenship if they volunteer, according to Pentagon officials. Yes, we could be opening recruiting offices in Mexico City, in Buenos Aires, in Dujubi, Azerbaijan. You name the place, we could be opening a recruiting office there. Go to the poorest parts of the world and set up a recruiting office. You too can see the world and become a U.S. citizen. As Brian Benner writes in the Boston Globe today, the idea of signing up residents who are seeking U.S. citizenship is gaining traction as a way to address a critical need for the Pentagon, while fully absorbing some of the roughly 1 million immigrants who enter the United States each year. Before 9/11, there were 750 non-U.S. citizens in the military in that year, 2001, who became citizens as a result of their participation. See, right now, if you're legally in the United States and you have a green card, you can join the military, and it fast-tracks you to citizenship. In 2001, 750 people took advantage of that. This last year, 4,600. So it's growing. It's 30,000 non-citizens in the United States Armed Forces at this moment, 2% of the active duty force. 100 non-citizens have died in Iraq and Afghanistan. However, a recent change in U.S. law, this is something Congress just passed, gave the Pentagon the authority to bring immigrants to the United States if it determines it's vital to national security. Indeed, some top military thinkers believe the United States should go as far as targeting foreigners in their native countries, like the Nepalese Gurkhas who fought the British for two centuries, fought with the British, right? The French Foreign Legion has 8,000 non-citizens even today. The Vatican has the Swiss Guard. Of course, that's because in the Vatican, to be a citizen, you have to be male. And so the Vatican is not a country that produces children, so they import the Swiss Guard. It's not without historical precedent, says one observer. Yeah. So should the United States go looking for non-citizens who'd like to get into the... Oh, is this a sign of how crazy we've become? Or is it time to just say, I'm sorry, wars of aggression, no more? 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. Back with your calls.
There goes the left DJ, who plays what he wants to play, and says what he wants to say, hey, hey, hey.
And Laura, the last DJ, who just lost the last, actually the first, inhabited island. This is pretty amazing. Lohakara, an island off the coast of India that was home to 10,000 people, just washed away because of global warming, rising sea levels. It's the first time in history an inhabited island has been washed away by global warming. Anyhow, welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on the place where being progressive never felt so good. Larger military, a costly proposal. Should we have a military draft? Obviously, we should be getting out of Iraq as soon as possible. By the way, a good chance we're going to have Dennis Kucinich with us at the top of the next hour. He's in London, where we're trying to track him down at the moment. He was scheduled to be with us. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number, 866-440-8466. And you can drop into our live chat room at TomHartman.com if you'd like. However you spell it, we'll get you there. And up at the top of the page, it says live chat. Just click on that and... bang, drop into our live chat room. Sam in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Sam, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? First of all, let me say I'm a big fan of liberal radio, and you are, without doubt, the smartest person out there. Tom, I want you to see if you can talk to a couple of things that happened over the weekend. Okay. Despite what the Iraq study group suggested to Bush, what's happening is apparently they're going totally against the suggestions and ramping up the rhetoric and the aggression against Iran. We can see with the new carrier group heading towards the Gulf, as well as the resolution that was passed on Saturday, as well as the arrest of the four Iranian security agents that were invited in by Talabani yesterday. I want to see, if I can, I want to get your opinion on all these things that are happening. I'll take my answer off the headline.
Yeah, well, hang on just a second here, Sam. The four Iranian agents who were arrested in Iraq, are you suggesting the Taliban invited them into the country to have them arrested? Oh, Sam is gone. I don't, you know, if so, well, that's something that's happened in the last couple of hours, and I didn't catch it, because my understanding is that we're holding four Iranians in Iraq. Well, this is we're seizing a pair of raids last weekend, but people suspected of conducting attacks on Iraqi security forces, according to senior Iraqi and American officials in Baghdad and Washington. I don't know. I am very concerned that the Bush administration is looking for a reason to attack Iran. Why? Because in large part, number one, it's consistent with the overall plan. Their plan for the region all along has been for us to control that region. It's imperialism. It's, you know, it's let's go back to being a, or colonialism. It's the empire. Let's go back to being an empire. And the Bushies and the neocons have been very, very pleased about embracing this word. And, of course, Cheney, you know, right up front.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserves, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. So, and whether it's to keep those reserves off the market and thus keep the price of oil high, or to have access to those reserves in order to have military and strategic power, or both, I'm willing to believe it. But we had Scott Ritter on this program about the middle of last summer, and I said, Scott, are we going to see an October surprise? Is Bush going to attack Iran in the fall? And he said, no, he can't attack them in the fall. The weather isn't right. He said, that part of the world, war has to be done according to the calendar. The moon, the weather, the winds, there's all these things that have to do with when you can attack. He said the first opportunity that he will have for an attack will be late February, early March. And he said, so if you see him massing aircraft carrier groups and troops and things like that in January or, you know, in the winter, then in all probability the March attack will happen. And it's the same thing as the March attack in Iraq. You'll recall, you know, he was building up the troops in Iraq like crazy, and he was all the time protesting, no, no, I'm the decider, and I haven't decided.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Yeah, I get to decide. And I haven't made up my mind yet. But, in fact, we learned that he had made up his mind even the first day, you know, literally, the first day he came into office. In fact, we found out that he had made up his mind way back before he came into office.
As a matter of fact, in interviews in 1999 with respected journalist and longtime Bush family friend Mickey Herskowitz, then Governor George Bush stated, one of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as commander-in-chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I had that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed, and I'm going to have a successful presidency, end quote.
George W. Bush, 1999. Doug in Staten Island, New York. Hey, Doug.
Good morning. Good afternoon, I should say. From my standpoint, there, you're over in California, though.
I'm in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, Portland.
Same effect. West Coast. Yeah.
Well, it's a pleasure to listen to you, Tom. It really is. And you know, as a sidebar, it's not what I want to speak about. But if people think that this idea of outside warriors is something, they should read P.J. Singer's book, Corporate Warriors. I mean, you know, we have 20,000-30,000 of them in there right now.
No, maybe as many as 100,000. I mean, that was the first step. The first thing they did was try to basically outsource the military to these contractors at $150,000 per person per year. Yeah. And we have somewhere between officially 25,000 and 100,000 of them over there. It's the second largest force. You know, the British is the third largest force, actually, in Iraq. But that's going to be very expensive. And so now they're saying, well, you know, if we go to third world countries, we can get people who will, you know, come in at PFC pay.
Absolutely. Look at the groups that are running it. I mean, you know, the people from the School of the Americas down in Central America.
Yep.
You have the Death Squad groups from South America.
Yep.
And so
a lot of good graduates there.
But I'll tell you why I called. You know, this whole idea, listening to Mr. Cox speak with you, it just shows that the Republicans' policies are a mile wide and an inch deep. Every time you try to pry beneath the surface, he got past his platitudes and his 15-second sound bites. He couldn't really state what exactly would transpire. He didn't have a definitive plan. And what people don't seem to understand, I have so many friends, Tom, that are of Arab descent, and they tell me, listen, pure and simple, a couple of them actually lived in Iraq, and they told me, listen, number one, you do a favor for us, and we must do 10 favors for you. That's the kind of people we are. This is just part of our culture.
It's a hospitality culture. It's a culture that is based on honor, whereas we're a culture that's based on barter.
Absolutely. And basically, what they're saying is that once you come in and you humiliate us, you do something to a member of our clan or our tribe. It doesn't matter if we've been fighting with them for 20 or 30 years. We all unite against you. And the problem is that we are not doing this seriously. We still only have, what was it, I think six full interpreters inside Bremer's walls there inside the Green Zone. And we have no real plan to get outside that area and to do anything and to tackle the different groups that are operating right now.
And we have no understanding of the culture. And these are people who are still angry over the Crusades.
I have a friend who lives there, and he tells me, he says, listen, he goes, your plans, he goes, might have worked a couple of years ago. He goes, right now, he goes, even if you manage to somehow calm Baghdad down, he goes, there are about 10 other cities that are just as large and just as volatile. He goes, you don't realize. He goes, we're into neighborhoods here. He goes, we have openings in one place, and you can get in one way and get out the other way. This is neighborhood by neighborhood, sometimes street by street, these clans and the rest of it.
The neighborhoods are becoming enclaves. In fact, the New York Times had a great piece, and I think it was the Saturday edition, about the ethnic cleansing that's going on right now.
Yeah.
How neighborhood by neighborhood, the Shia are pushing the Sunni out, and Baghdad is becoming increasingly a Shia-dominated city. Doug, thank you for the call.
He said the last situation that happened with the 200 that were killed inside Sada City, he said that was the straw that broke the camel's back. He goes, now, he goes, Sada's basically lost control of his own troops, a lot of them, and they're just running amok now.
Ouch. Ouch. Doug, thanks for the heads up.
All right.
Good to hear from you. Prez in San Francisco. Hey, Prez.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
That's good. Well, please, first thing, give my absolute best to Dennis Kucinich. What an honorable man.
I shall. Assuming that we're able to actually get a hold of him today.
He's wonderful.
It's a maybe. Dennis is on the show a lot. He's a good friend.
Yeah, oh, good. I wanted to comment. I'm also reading Ultimate Sacrifice, and I thank you for that as well.
You're welcome.
I found that.
And you'll find some interesting mentions in there. If you see this movie, The Good Shepherd, you'll find some interesting comparisons. I think I mentioned at the top of the show that...
Yeah, but it was funny because I just started. I bought it a couple days ago. So anyway, thanks for that. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about... I'm a Vietnam veteran. I joined the Marine Corps when I was 17 years old. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk about this volunteer army. Yeah. There's a couple of things that it does. It avoids the draft, of course, which they don't want. And with the increasing numbers of poor people, and then also now they're talking about more aliens in there, these people will be strangers to our country and also strangers to us. It'll be easier for them to be used against the populace of the United States, in my opinion.
This is why,
because of that, in
1787, when James Madison finished the first draft of the U.S. Constitution, I mean, collectively the Constitutional Convention did it, but Madison wrote it down, and he sent a copy to his mentor, Thomas Jefferson, who was then the U.S. envoy to Paris. He was in France.
Right.
And Jefferson sent him back a letter saying, you know, I think this is brilliant, I like this and this and this, but here's what I don't like. And Jefferson proposed a Bill of Rights. And in the Bill of Rights, he wanted there to be one of those 10 amendments to the Constitution forbidding there being a standing army during time of peace, on the one hand, and in requiring that every male between the ages of 17 and 47 be a member of a local militia with a gun in their home, on the other hand, so that during time of war, if we were ever invaded, the entire male part of our nation would become the army like it is in Switzerland, and Switzerland hasn't been invaded in 800 years for this reason. And Jefferson cited that, and number one. And number two, that you wouldn't have an all-volunteer army which could cause mischief during times of peace and create its own little industry and perhaps even take over the government, as had been seen so often in European countries.
Yeah, he whittled those 18 amendments down to like 12, right?
Yeah, well, actually, the remnant of that debate between Madison and Jefferson, well, it wasn't even a debate. Madison was on his side, ultimately. But the whole thing is the Second Amendment. And they got rid of the, you know, no standing army part and left the everybody's got to be a gun and be in a militia. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
It's the Al Franken Show with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio.
Child of man. No flag should ever be more important.
Department of Sanity. Tom Hartman here with you. 9.5 minutes before the hour, I found the article that Sam was telling us about. This from the German press agency, published, actually it was published yesterday. I'm surprised that this isn't getting more coverage in America. Well, actually I'm not surprised. The mainstream media is right wing. I mean, that's the bottom line. You hear mainstream media, you know it's associated somehow with some right wing corporation somewhere. And sure enough, the Iranian diplomats, this from the German press agency, DPA, the Iranian diplomat, these are the four Iranians who were arrested inside Iraq. Foreign Minister spokesman Mohammad El-Hosseini of Iran said to the press, this is reported by the ISNA news agency, the Iranian news agency, that the foreign minister conveys his protest to U.S. officials via the Swiss ambassador. He says this is a move against all diplomatic norms. The Iranian diplomats were invited by Iraqi Prime Minister Jalal Talabani, and the Iraqi government is therefore responsible for their release, and the intruders, that would be us, should give relevant explanations in accordance with international norms. This move will have unpleasant consequences. Looks like we stepped in it. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Brian in Queens, New York. Hey, Brian.
Oh, how you doing, Tom?
I'm great.
Tom, I just quickly want to, well, I had a couple of points. One was about the fact of the fact that this fellow, the Cox, who was running, you know,
mm-hmm.
made the point that was almost comical about the fact that Halliburton's in there to keep the corruption from happening, you know, redeveloping the city. I think that's kind of ludicrous.
$8 billion missing, you know, it's an amount of physical cash, an amount of money big enough to see from outer space. Not to say that Halliburton has walked off with it, but gee, who's there anyway?
Tom, I also have another point, and this might be, you know, I read the book Ultimate Sacrifice, which was an excellent book, and I think it shows why Bobby Kennedy was really his hands were tied as far as publicly being able to go after the killers of his brother.
For a while. Once he figured the whole thing out, then he came out and he said, okay, that's it. In fact, you know, there was a speech he gave a week before he was assassinated where he said, I'm convinced that only the power of the presidency will be able to speak, you know, basically that if he was elected president, he was going to lay it all out of the table.
But the only thing it didn't change my mind, as excellent a book as it was, is that I still believe that it was a coup, a coup d'etat, and I think mm-hmm. that the mob itself could not have carried it out, because if it had been effectively, if there wasn't complicity in terms of like the agency and other people.
Well, you know, you could argue that since Nixon brought the CIA in with the mob and the mob in with the CIA, particularly with regard to Castro in Cuba back in the late 50s, 58, 59, or 59, 60, what? That the mob, the CIA, that it was all sort of one institution. At a certain level. But, Brian, that's a rather esoteric argument that's going to lose three-quarters of our callers and listeners, rather, and that's not what you called about. You called about Halliburton in Iraq?
Yeah. Well, just one more quick point, though, Tom.
Yeah.
Do you realize, though, that in the pictures of the people being taken off the trains, you often see the one of the three trams, but do you realize that photograph is also Ed Lansdale giving a flat-hand trajectory, meaning that you're covered?
Yeah.
That is pictured. There's pictures of them. Fletcher Prouty, in an interview that someone gave, would not go on the record, but he did say that Ed's...
Brian, I appreciate your concern and passion for the topic, but we'll pick up the JFK assassination some other time. It is such a larger topic than we can do in the 2.5 minutes we have left here, with this program. Chris in Novato, California. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? I really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
Just one thing I'm a little bit curious about. I think we should be a little more mindful about the press conference that was, I believe it was early last week, when Gates was over in Iraq, sitting at the table with the soldiers.
Right.
So it reminded me when
you call it a press conference, I call it a photo opportunity, but in any case.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we shouldn't forget some of the things, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, with Bush, with a lot of the plants, you know, in some of the press conferences, and then the one where they really caught when they were doing the staging, when the woman was talking to the troops, rehearsing for the press conference.
Yep.
And all that.
Yep.
The point, I guess, I'm trying to, I was just real concerned that the one soldier that they selected came out with really what Bush was looking for, and that is that there was a need for more troops.
Mm-hmm.
Just wondering why did that one, you know, there were, I guess, a dozen roughly or more.
Because, like I said, it was a photo op and not a press conference, and it was, you know, carefully staged. These guys don't do anything that isn't carefully staged. They're you know, it's all about perception, not reality. They're not really, you know, they don't give a damn what the troops think. They want to get a spokesman for their position out there in front of it. Chris, thanks for the call. Jack in Los Angeles, about a minute before we have to wrap the show, Jack. What's up?
Yes.
Or at least this hour of the show.
Quickly.
Happy Boxing Day, by the way.
Thank you. Well, listen, the thing I'm concerned with is I remember in July of 2001, there were people that were saying that this Cheney Energy Commission thing was really going to turn into what happened on 9/11 and the whole invasions that are taking place.
Yes, and
now,
it did.
Now you're talking right here about Scott Ritter saying that we're gonna go out and maybe nuke Iran.
Not nuke them, but
in March.
Yeah, in March.
Or
that's what
somehow.
He said. Yep.
There, this Democratic Congress needs to really get on these people and hold them to account for what they've already done and get them out of there.
I agree, Jack. And they will have the ability to do that starting in a week, and we'll see, or a week and a half, and we'll see how it plays out. Jack, thanks a lot for the call. You know, a lot of us have a lot of high hopes for the Democratic Congress, and if they don't start behaving like they should, then we need to be all over them. And, you know, because as I've said so many times, it's not the elected officials. They represent us. We don't elect leaders in this country. We elect representatives. It's about us. We have to create the parade. We need to be contacting our elected members of Congress. We'll be back right after the news at the top of the hour. Happy Boxing Day, the 26th of December.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Well, you know, actually, we fiendishly plot for clean elections. Maybe a national health insurance program. How about a clean environment? Good public schools. Free public education all the way up to the PhD level. You want to invest in America? Let's invest in America. How about peace around the world? How about living in harmony and peace with other species as well as other people? Yeah, it's some of that radical stuff. You know, that's radical stuff. Ron Suskind, the New York Times, talking about Karl Rove. Well, actually, he was quoting a senior advisor to Bush. Most people think he was quoting Karl Rove. We don't know. Yeah, but a senior advisor to Bush told Ron Suskind of the New York Times, quote, "We're an empire now, and when we act, we create our own reality." This was about 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Manufactured reality? It's called the Global War on Terror. R.W. Behan writes about this over at commondreams.org back on December 3rd. It's an article called The Surreal Politics of Premeditated War. It's something I recommend very, very highly. You have to dig through the archives there to find it. We'll have a link to it over at on our message board at tomhartman.com. And he suggests that the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, not just Iraq, but Afghanistan, were both premeditated, conceived, planned, and prepared long before 9/11. By the way, happy Boxing Day. Today, the day after Christmas, is Boxing Day in England and in Canada. There's a whole lot of different stories about why it's called Boxing Day and what it's all about. The one that I think is probably the most accurate, although I'm not British, so probably somebody will call and argue with me about it, is that it's the day after the Christmas celebration. And so after the Christmas celebration, the rich folk in the manor house, the poor folk, the serfs, the 99% of the, you know, the working poor would come to the manor house and they'd say, "You got anything left over?" And they'd get a box of food or they'd get a box of stuff that people didn't want. And so boxes got passed out. So it's Boxing Day, day after Christmas. Anyhow, happy Boxing Day. It's also the first day of Kwanzaa. So for those of you who celebrate Kwanzaa, happy first day of Kwanzaa, or whatever the appropriate protocol is for saying that. Anyhow, in the past, we have had premeditated military wars of aggression, essentially. Panama, Grenada, Kosovo. But Kosovo was essentially with the approval of the world. Panama and Grenada, these were small. We didn't set up huge military bases and do, you know, long-term occupy. Well, arguably we did, but nothing like Afghanistan and Iraq. This is a brand new thing in American history. This is pretty mind-boggling. So it starts with Don Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein back during the Reagan presidency. But then we leap forward to January 26, 1998. Rumsfeld and 17 other people, they're all members of the Project for a New American Century, PNAC. They write a letter to Clinton saying that he better overthrow Saddam Hussein, and if he fails to do so, quote, a significant portion of the world's oil supply will be put at hazard. Or as Dick Cheney would say,
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserves, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and in addition to Rumsfeld, people who had served in the Bush administration who signed this thing, Elliot Abrams, Richard Armitage, John Bolton, Paula Dobrynsky, Robert Kagan, Zalmay Khalilzad, Richard Pearl, William Schneider, Robert Zoellick, and Paul Wolfowitz. So Bush takes office, and who does he put into place in powers, in positions of power in his government? 8 cabinet secretaries and his national security advisor all came directly from what industry? Oil! 32 of the secretariats of defense, state, energy, agriculture, interior, and the Office of Management and Budget, oil company executives. In his second week in office, he puts Dick Cheney in charge of the National Energy Policy Development Group. Now, you would think they would be developing national energy policy. But Larry Klayman and the guys over at Judicial Watch, that right-wing think tank that did the lawsuits that uncovered, you know, with Paula Jones and all that, that uncovered ultimately Monica Lewinsky and got Bill Clinton impeached, Larry Klayman did a similar lawsuit against Dick Cheney and discovered that Dick Cheney's task force, his National Energy Policy Development Group, was actually sitting around the table with a bunch of oil industry executives, including Ken Lay, with maps of Iraq. Now, this was in March of 2001. This was 6 months before 9/11. Just 60 days after Bush has been appointed president by the Supreme Court. 6 months before 9/11. And here we have Cheney and his oil industry buddies sitting around carving up Iraq. In addition, they're talking, this is the task force, talking about the oil and gas in the Caspian Basin. Now, the Caspian Basin, these are the former Soviet territories to the north of Afghanistan. 125 billion barrels of proven oil reserves, 433 estimated billion barrels more. Now, just, you know, for your consideration, it's estimated that the world oil reserves right now, known oil reserves in the world, are around 1 trillion barrels. That's 1,000 billion barrels. So the Caspian Basin, 125 billion barrels, that's like 12.5% of the world's known reserves. Anybody who controls that much oil can break the back of OPEC and drive down the cost of oil. Not something the American oil companies want. Unless we control it, and we control it very carefully. So March 2001, his task force pouring over these pipelines and tankers and all that. And sure enough, what did they discover? 30 companies from 30 different countries were bidding on the oil in Iraq. Not a single American company. Not right, says the Bush administration. So Condi Rice's National Security Council creates this, there's this top secret memo that comes to Connie Rice that says that she should, quote, cooperate fully with the Energy Task Force as it considered melding two seemingly unrelated areas of policy. Oh, yeah, what are these two areas of policy that Connie Rice is supposed to be melding? Number one, the review of operational policies toward rogue states such as Iraq. And number two, the actions regarding the capture of new and existing oil and gas fields. Oh, gee, what an interesting coincidence.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserves, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I'm assuming you know how to add two and two. April 2002, almost a full year before the invasion, the Oil and Energy Working Group provided a cover. Iraq, it said in its final report. Now, this is a year before the invasion. This is when Bush is still running around saying...
He said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
April 2002, year before the invasion, the Oil and Energy Working Group says Iraq should be opened to international oil companies as quickly as possible after the war. The country should establish a conducive business environment to attract investment in oil and gas resources. End quote. This is from Dick Cheney's Oil and Energy Working Group. A year before our invasion of Iraq, they're deciding that American oil companies should come in, at, quote, as quickly as possible after the war. How do you do this? With what are called production sharing agreements, PSAs. Production sharing agreement means that the company, the country, pays to drill the wells, and then the oil company gets the oil, but they pay back the company, or the country, rather, for the cost of drilling the well. In other words, all the risk is carried by the country. All the profit goes to the corporation. And what a surprise, production sharing agreements now in Iraq are held by, guess who? ExxonMobil, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, BP, Amoco, and Royal Dutch Shell. Who held none of these before our invasion. This was institutionalized by Paul Bremer's Coalition Provisional Authority, by the way. Now, you've got that in Iraq. What about Afghanistan? $16 trillion worth of oil and gas. How do you get it to market? You have to build a pipeline across Afghanistan. As R.W. Bayan writes in his Common Dreams piece, The Surreal Politics of Premeditated War, after the fall of the Soviet Union, the first Western oil company to express interest and take action in the basin was the Britas Corporation of Argentina. Now, this is interesting, because Amoco wanted those rights, but Britas had them. I got to tell you an amazing story of what happened right after the break. And then we'll take your calls at 866-440-THOM, 866-440-8466. We're live all this week, the week after Christmas. Christmas yesterday, today Boxing Day, first day of Kwanzaa. 16 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman with you. TomHartman.com also if you want to drop into our live chat room. We'll be right back.
Take a deep breath. Feel like you're choking.
Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, the place where smart people get their news. So Britas, this company from Argentina, has a contract with Afghanistan to build a pipeline across Afghanistan. Unocal starts just going to war with them, metaphorically speaking. They hire Henry Kissinger as a consultant. They hire Richard Armitage as a consultant. They hire Zalmay Khalilzad as a consultant. They hire Hamid Karzai as a consultant. They bring the Taliban to their headquarters in Texas, talk to them, but they're getting nowhere. The vice president of Unocal, John Maresca, testifies before Congress on February 12, 1998, asking Congress to remove the Taliban and insert a stable government. Yeah. So Bush invades Afghanistan. And, guess who's now the head of Afghanistan? The former Unocal executive, Hamid Karzai. Guess who's our ambassador to Iraq? The former Unocal executive, Zalmay Khalilzad. And guess who no longer has the contract? Britas of Argentina. Is it all about oil? Is it all about money? I frankly am skeptical. But the evidence is piling up. Meanwhile, Saddam Hussein, 30 days, and they're going to hang him. His chief defense counsel, Amnesty International, first of all, they say, we're very disappointed about this decision. We're against the death penalty as a matter of principle, but particularly in this case because it comes after a flawed trial. His chief counsel, Khalil al-Dulami, Dulaimi said, told Reuters from Amman, Jordan, if they dare implement the sentence, and I absolutely agree with him on this, it will be a catastrophe for the region and will only deepen the sectarian fighting. Because what's happened is Saddam Hussein has become the poster boy for the Sunnis. I mean, who would you rather have the Sunnis idolizing, Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden? They're both Sunnis. By hanging Saddam Hussein, we're going to flip them all over to Osama bin Laden. Or at least, you know, the ethnic cleanses is already happening. The New York Times, fascinating piece on Saturday in the Saturday paper of the New York Times, article about how the ethnic cleansing is happening in Baghdad right now. You know, this ongoing thing. Jim in Quad Cities, Illinois. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm good. What's up?
I just got done reading The Screwed. I want to tell you, it's just an inspirational book.
Well, thank you.
And my thoughts are thank you. I write to our newspaper a lot, as you suggest in the book. We have a section there called Speak Out in our little newspaper here. Mm-hmm. And every time I mention some kind of connection between our president and the Saudi Arabians, it gets completely cut out. They won't even publish it.
Okay.
So how can we go about getting the word out if the mainstream media goes out of the way to make sure we don't hear about it?
Yeah, well, see, that's the rest of the story. I mean, it's like, why is it free? And Jim, thanks for raising that. Let me just riff on this for just a second. We'll take a break and come back with the rest of your calls. This from Backstage.com. Hollywood is looking at this because independent film producers or TV producers are vanishing. What if six white male billionaires decided what 300 million people watched on TV, saw in movie theaters, heard on the radio, and read in every major newspaper? What if those six men, including the country's biggest defense contractor, chose which projects got greenlighted and which actors were cast on television? Some would call it an Orwellian nightmare. But artists and thousands of other U.S. citizens are calling it today's reality. More precisely, it's called media consolidation. As it stands, six companies own 90% of the media holdings in the United States. Viacom, which owns Paramount, CBS, MTV Networks, and DreamWorks. Disney, whose subsidiaries include ABC, Miramax, Pixar, Touchstone, Walt Disney Studios, and Walt Disney Theatrical. Time Warner, parent company of Warner Brothers, HBO, half of CW, CNN, and AOL. General Electric, which owns NBC Universal. And Bertelsmann, the German giant, which, by the way, owns one of my publishers, Random House, which has published three of my books, two of them are still in print, whose holdings include Sony and BMG Music Publishing, and News Corp, owner of 20th Century Fox, Fox Broadcasting, My Network TV, FX Networks, and MySpace. The men at the helm of these corporations are respectively white billionaires, Sumner Redstone, Robert Iger, Richard Parsons, Jeffrey Immelt, Carl Bertelsmann, and Rupert Murdoch. And so there's some, the SEC is holding some hearings out in L.A., and there's a lot of union folks. In fact, one of the points, the Directors Guild of America, third Vice President Taylor Hackford, he says 66% of network primetime programming was created by independent producers in the 1992 season. By the 1998 season, that number dropped to 38%. Today it's 24%. Additionally, there were 23 independent suppliers of scripted programming in the 1990s, this to television. Today, there are only two suppliers, Warner Brothers and Sony. So, you know, what you're seeing is the vast homogenization of media. I think it's time to bring back the Sherman Antitrust Act, frankly. It's just very simple. And it would be a good thing for media. I think it would be a good thing for business. I think it would be a great thing for Wall Street. It would be a great thing for the stock market. Look at all the equity that was created when AT&T was broken up. It actually increased shareholder value. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. I'll be back right after this break. When we're standing at a distance, we keep on waiting on the world to change. And welcome back. Fair and slightly unbalanced. Tom Harbin here with you. 34 minutes past the hour. It's listener-supported radio, supported by you, our listeners. Indeed, you're the ones who make this program possible and all the programming on Air America Radio by supporting our sponsors. Listen to your local radio station to to who's sponsoring that program, this program, or, you know, any of the program, and let them know you're listening. Buy their products. Recommend their products to other people. That is what drives this process. This is very much listener-supported radio. Also, support our national sponsors like Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time, all fair trade, all organic. SacredGroundsCoffee.com. Small Dog Electronics, get the latest iPods now, smalldog.com, and the organic wine company, ecowine.com. 35 minutes past the hour, 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number, TomHartmann.com, if you'd like to drop into our live chat room. And could it be, is that taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe?
I'll have to amend that. You can call me the caller formerly known as number 12.
Incredible. Back 3.5 years ago when I was on KTRC and Sirius, when we were syndicated by the Mike Malloy and I were syndicated by IE America Radio Network, you started calling into the program as a conservative to argue with me. Where are you at these days, number 12?
Let's put it this way. I haven't driven a cab for 2 years. Actually, I went back to school full-time, and I'm having a much better time doing that, even though I'm broke. As of the last election, my new platform would be, it's like, you know, the Democrat-Republican system is nothing more than, you know, pick Hitler or Stalin. Who do you want to live under? You know, it's good cop, bad cop. So my new platform is pro-Constitution, pro-Bill of Rights, anti-Republican, anti-Democrat, anti-Federal Reserve.
Okay. Well, you know, I will by and large probably hang out in a similar place, although beware of libertarians. But, you know,
not libertarians, because I have certain issues that we don't have to get into right now. Yeah. That, like, libertarians are like, you know, just like throw the gates open and whatever.
Libertarians are Republicans who want to smoke dope and get laid. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Something like that. But that leaves, you know, back in, like, you know, what was that movie that came out in 1980? Blade Runner. And the opening of the movie was like, you know, takes place in 2025. And it just says, 2025, corporations rule.
Right. Yeah, that's the libertarian paradise. Anyhow, number 12, that's not what you called about. You called about Saddam Hussein.
Well, yeah, I mean, I kind of called about that. I don't, you know, it's like he's a bad guy. I'm glad he's gone. If you hang him, sure, you're going to create a martyr. And if I really think, like, the way that the power is being manipulated, you know, by the Democrat-Republican system is you have a bunch of willing, you know, I think Lenin's term was useful idiots.
Yes.
And this just plays into their hands. You know, it can be like, you know, if he gets hung, it could, the Democrats.
I think it could be the spark that lights the fuse on the Sunnis blowing up in the face of the Shia. You know, they're already feeling so oppressed right now in Iraq. And I think, frankly, if that happens, that's what's going to bring Saudi Arabia into the battle. It may be what would bring Jordan and parts of Egypt into the battle, not necessarily intentionally, but just, you know, the people of those countries. It could bring Syria. I mean, it could start the regional war. It could be the Archduke Ferdinand assassination moment, the hanging of Saddam Hussein.
It could be something. It could be the World War One moment. I really think the whole thing is a fixed game, and it's always, regardless of who's in control, Democrats, Republicans, whether you hang Saddam or whether you blow up Osama, which I don't think he's even really a legitimate target because I think he's nothing more than a patsy. I think it's just a rigged game and wake up and the Matrix is not, you know, the Republican rule. The Matrix is the Democrat-Republican powers that be.
Yeah, well, I'm a little less cynical than you, number 12, because I think that there are some very good people in the Democratic Party. But by and large, yeah, we've got a system that's badly broken and he's fixing it. And it's not going to get fixed unless enough of us get active. Number 12, great to hear. After all these years, thanks a lot for the call. Jack in San Diego, California. Hey, Jack, what's on your mind today?
Well, you know, I was listening to your program, and I was curious about one thing. If everything that you say is true, and I believe it's true, I'm puzzled why Russia and China recently came on board to approve sanctions on Iran, which conveniently expire in 60 days. And the our carrier groups will be in a position to attack then. The weather will be right. It seems like Russia and China is handing the United States another gift basket of oil contracts.
Could be. That's assuming that Russia and China actually think that we're going to do it and that it will benefit us. What if Russia and China think that we're going to do it and we're going to screw things up so badly that the price of oil is going to go to $200 a barrel. They're going to end up with an axis, with an alliance, which is going to be the new world leader. I mean, keep in mind, Russia's sitting on about 25% of the world's oil supply right now. And China is a huge consumer of oil. I think that they think that Bush is going to go in, he's going to blow it, and they're going to be able to pick up the pieces. And it'll be the beginning of the Sino, how would you say it, the Chinese-Russian century.
Okay, so your scenario is, and this thought has crossed my mind, that is that they almost hope that we do attack Iran, we further deplete our military, get more bogged down in the Middle East, and that at the end of the day, Russia and China will come out ahead?
Yeah, this is Putin doing to us what we did to...
In Afghanistan.
Yeah, what we did to the Soviets in Afghanistan, yeah, in my opinion.
So you think that...
And the Chinese then get to win without ever having to pull our currency. So they get to keep all our money. They get to keep the trade relations with us. And you know, as the prices go up, I mean, they're doing fine, and they don't have to do battle with us. And then once we are totally neutered, essentially, the Chinese take Taiwan, which is really high on their list.
So then you would probably be more likely to believe that at the end of the 60-day period, we probably will attack Iran.
Either us or a region or a country in the region which is allied with us. Or possibly, you know, Scott Ritter again on this program pointed out some months ago that MEK, the Iranian terrorist group that we support, is working with U.S. forces who are inside Iran right now to, you know, I mean, you might have an internal attack, an Iranian equivalent of 9/11, where, you know, a whole bunch of facilities blow up and there's, you know, and it's attributed in our press to dissidents inside Iran, but in the Iranian press, it's attributed to the U.S., and that then causes them to launch an attack against Iraq, which provides us with a rationale to go into Iran, you know, et cetera.
See, I'm more inclined to believe that the decision's already been made to attack Iran, and one reason in particular is that this second carrier group that's steaming towards the Persian Gulf is headed by the aircraft carrier Stennis, mm-hmm. which is our newest, most sophisticated carrier. I don't believe that we would put that in harm's way unless we were planning to use it.
Yeah.
And that group wouldn't sail unless it was outfitted with nukes.
I'm inclined to agree with you, Jack. I you know, and I sure hope we're both wrong. And what you're saying is what Scott Ritter was saying 6 months ago. In fact, I think he just wrote a book about it called Target Iran. And I know he wrote a book about it. My recollection is that that's the title. And he talked about it on this program. And several other people have talked about it. This is what... who's the reporter? Several people actually have reported on this in the recent past. So,
well,
yeah,
oh,
it's entirely possible.
You're talking about Cy Hirsch, correct?
Yeah, Cy Hirsch. Thank you very much.
Now,
yeah.
Look, if you and I and Scott Ritter and Cy Hirsch are talking about this, then it only stands to reason that our Democratic leaders who are going to be in charge in January are aware of this. Shouldn't they, as one of the first steps in their agenda, be to revisit this authorization for the president to go to war after 9/11 and restrict it?
Yeah. Well, it was already restricted. He had to provide Congress with a letter saying that he had proof that Saddam Hussein was involved directly in 9/11. And he did write that letter and submit it to Congress within, as I recall, 30 days of the invasion of Iraq. And that in and of itself should be brought up because that was clearly a lie. I mean, and this then begins any of these investigations are just going to open what are just inevitably impeachable, you know, behaviors on the part of Bush.
Well, look, I guess my point is I don't believe that President Bush right now feels that he needs to go back to Congress to get authorization to attack Iran.
I think you're right.
And I feel that it's up to the new democratically controlled Congress to let him know that he does need to go back to Congress for approval.
I agree with you, Jack, and that needs to be one of their loudest and first messages. Thank you very much for the call. John in San Francisco. Hey, John.
Hi. Yeah, the thing I wanted to bring up, because I think it's still a very much a live issue, is the idea that one of the reasons we attacked Iraq was because Saddam had switched from the dollar to the euro as a currency.
He hadn't done it, but he was threatening to do it, yeah.
No, he had actually.
Oh, he had actually done it. That's that. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, it was a few months before.
Exactly. He did it in December, and he had already made, I think the number was $36 million in just the currency exchange rate benefit to him.
Right. And Iran is now talking about the same thing. They've got this oil bourse. They're building on, what is it, Kish Island or something like that? There's an island off the coast of Iran. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's a possibility. I mean, it's a scenario that is not nonsensical.
Well, here in San Francisco, Gene Burns, a very conservative talk show host, was ranting about that in the 6 months before the war, saying this is why we're going to attack Iraq, because he's trying to talk all of OPEC into switching to the euro, and we just couldn't stand it. It would ruin our economy.
Yeah, it would. It would also, if all of OPEC did it, it would ruin a lot of the OPEC nation. It would ruin Saudi Arabia, for example, because they're holding so much U.S. debt. What you have, basically, is the battle between the countries that are selling oil and in dollars, and they don't care what they sell it in, and the countries that are selling oil and holding U.S. debt, which is principally Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia and China are interested in stability in the dollar. There's a lot of other forces in the world that just don't give a damn about the dollar, and it's a scary one, because conservative economics have destroyed us. 45 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to Pillow. I'll help you escape the matrix. Tom Hartman here with you, 9.5 minutes before the hour. 1-866-440-THOM live on Boxing Day. One of our engineers here at Clear Channel in Portland, Oregon, Chris, just mentioned to me Boxing Day. I was telling him about how, the lords and nobles of the house after Christmas holidays would box up leftover food and the stuff that people didn't eat and give it to the serfs, the working poor. And he said, we should, take a variation on that. Everybody should box up everything they don't need the day after Christmas, including everything in their closets, and take it to Goodwill. I said, that's kind of a cool idea, actually. Anyhow, 1-866-440-THOM, Sergeant, Columbia, Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. First time you and I have talked. It's a pleasure. I've heard you a lot, and thank the world of you.
Well, thank you, and thanks for calling. What's up?
I wanted to talk a little bit. All this money we're spending in Iraq and spending on weapon system and all, it's a shame when you look what's going on down here on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, especially Jackson County.
Mm-hmm.
The way the money is being distributed, it goes down channels, and by the time it gets down to the people, little of the money is left, little of the goods is left. Organizations that are actually doing things are not getting the money, like Jackson County Community Services Coalition. You can get to their site by my site, unreportednews.net. But it is horrible. We have people dying down here. We got senior citizens who are getting sick because these FEMA trailers are so inadequate. They're poorly constructed. They got the worst trailers that could possibly be made. Break-ins are ungodly. People wake up every day and go out knowing that there's a major chance that they're going to be broke into, and what little they have will be stolen from them. Mm-hmm. And there are people whose number of fires are up because these connections to the electricity is so poorly done. It is a nightmare, Tom. These people are suffering. And
Sarge, welcome to Republican economics. I mean, this is what you're seeing right here. George W. Bush, he says, number one, go shopping. Number two, give money to private charities. He put Pat Robertson's charity up there on the FEMA page right after Katrina and said, give money to Pat Robertson for Operation Blessing. And the $353,262,948,612 we've spent so far in the Iraq War, which just went up by another $100,000, could have built 3,180,801 homes.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, Tom. It's just, I went through Camille, and the nightmare from Camille was horrible, but this is nothing compared to what is going on now. This is unbelievable, Tom.
It is the triumph. Sorry,
Tom, may I give that website to
you? You certainly may. Yeah.
Okay, it's www.jccsc.org, and We really need everything that everybody can send, because this is one man, his name is Jim Yancey, and he is actually doing something for the people. So your money will go to the people if you send it to them.
Sarge, give the website one more time.
Okay. JCCSC.org.
Good.
And, Tom, if you ever want to interview Jim, I'll be more than happy to arrange it for you.
Great. Thank you, Sarge. You can drop in the chat room and pass the information along to David. He's sick today, but you know, when he's back, you can pass it along to him.
Okay, and thank you, Tom, for giving me this time. You don't know how much it means to the people here.
Well, thank you for calling in and being a representative of the folks down there, because I know this is an absolute disaster, and it's a disaster not in the natural disaster way. This is a political disaster. This is just pure.
I tell you what,
fault.
The storm was bad. But what is going on this way is worse than any combination. Katrina, Elena, Frederick, Andrew.
No, I'm right there with you, Sarge. I totally agree. Stanton, thank you for the call. Sally in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Sally, about a minute here before we've got to take a break. What's up?
Okay, Tom, I just, first of all, where did you go to school? Formal education.
Why?
Oh, because you're just eloquent.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm a college dropout. So I went
Wonderful.
To Michigan State University and Lansing Community College.
Okay. I was hoping you were going to tell me something great like that. But, Tom, I guess I want to say, I want to ask you a question. What do you think, just because we're all so busy, I'm a working mom, you know, single mom, and trying to get involved in the political process, and everything that's been said today is just, I mean, we can talk about this. It sometimes gets absolutely overwhelming, and not to diminish anyone else's ability to grasp subject matter, anything like that, but I feel that all of this information is so intense and overwhelming that some people might just say, you know, I can't look at it because that would mean my son or daughter died for nothing, or,
sure.
You know, what are we going to come to, or
that's
we
human nature.
War criminals that we really are?
Yeah, Sally, it's absolutely human nature not to want to look at those things.
Exactly.
And you
so
can't, and therefore I don't think we can blame those people who make that decision.
No, absolutely not. But what I want to say is, can't we just come to a quick end? I mean, my mom was a great one for common sense, huge on common sense. Is there some way that we can cut to the chase with this, get the money out of the political process, finally, and just say, look, this is X amount of dollars we're going to give each party, three parties, whatever party, run on that, and may the best man win, or
yeah,
woman.
This is, you know, Bernie Sanders has been calling for public financing of elections for a long, long time, and he's not the only one. There's a lot of good politicians out there who are looking at and Sally, thank you for the call. We've got to wrap up the hour here. Who are looking at what you've identified and saying, you know, there's a real problem. Here in Portland, we have voter-owned elections. It's happening in Arizona. It's happened in Maine to a certain extent. Actually, I think in Maine it's happened in a big way, in Arizona to a certain extent. A lot of communities around the country are saying, no, we're going to get the money out by putting public money in. And I think it's a great idea. It's so much, and in every case, it's happened because of grassroots activism, because of folks like you and me getting active. 57 minutes past the hour. We'll be back after the news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone here in the People's Republic of Little Beirut, also known as Portland, Oregon. Tom Hartman here with you. Filling in for Al Franken also this week. And doing my own program. The White House lawyers up. Rude, writing over at tpmmuckraker.com. White House lawyers up. State to investigate robocalls. GOP senator breaks silence over goods anti-Muslim comments. President Bush is bracing for what could be an onslaught of investigations by the new Democratic-led Congress by hiring lawyers to fill key White House posts and preparing to play defense on countless document requests and possible subpoenas. Bush is moving quickly to fill vacancies within his stable of lawyers, although White House officials say there are no plans to drastically expand the legal staff to deal with the flood of oversight. In the days after the elections, the White House announced, this is in the Baltimore Sun, in the days after the elections, the White House announced that Bush had hired two replacements to plug holes in the counsel's office, including one lawyer, Christopher G. Opperson, who is a specialist in handling white-collar investigations. A third hire was special securities law specialist Paul R. Eckert, whose duties include dealing with the office of the special counsel. Bush is in the process of hiring a fourth associate counsel, said Emily Larimore, a White House spokeswoman. Yeah. The Sun quotes Larimore as saying, they just think it's inevitable that there will be some investigations that will tie up some time and attention. They don't think they have anything to hide. Yeah. And so Bush is lawyering up. See, this the thing that concerns me the most about this is that Bush is now becoming the equivalent of the rat in the corner. I don't know how many of you have had the experience. Growing up in Michigan and having lived on farms a couple of different times in my life or in rural areas, you end up with a rat or a mouse in the house, a rat in particular, and you chase that. I remember chasing one around in the basement of an old farmhouse in New Hampshire that we lived in, and I'm running around with this bushel basket that I'm going to drop on top of this thing. Sort of like, you know, putting a cup on a wasp, you know. And I figured, once I got him, I could then like slide a board underneath it or something and take him outside and let him go. And I got this rat in the corner, and all of a sudden, he comes flying at me. I mean, literally flying at me out of this corner. Just jumped right up. I jumped out of the way. He goes flying right on by. He's yelling and screaming, squealing or squeaking. And you corner rats, and suddenly they become very, very dangerous. Could it be that the invasion of Iran is going to be Bush's response to Democratic investigations? Or am I sounding like some kind of conspiracy nut? I don't know. I just have to say, 7 years ago, if you had said to me, the day will come when the United States Congress will pass a law saying that police can sneak into your home without a warrant and go through your things and never tell you, I would have said, no, not a chance. 7 years ago, if you had said to me, the day will come when we will invade a country that did nothing to us whatsoever and represented no threat to us, and we will lose 3,000 American lives in the process and kill 600,000 people, I would have said, what, are you nuts? If 6 years ago you had come to me and you would have said, or 7 years ago you'd come to me and you would have said, the United States is going to be attacked by a small group of criminals, fewer than 5,000 of them, and as a result of that, the president is going to say that he has the right to ignore the will of Congress, to change laws, to do away with habeas corpus, to suspend the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth, Seventh, and Eighth Amendments, I would have said, what are you, nuts? It's already happened. Back in 1812, the United States was attacked. In fact, the Canadians and the British seized this country and they burned the White House. James Madison's wife had to flee a burning White House with a painting of George Washington, stuffed down her dress. And James Madison, President Madison, didn't think that we had to suspend civil liberties. Are you kidding? We have a strong history of holding up democratic ideals in this country. It would never happen. What are you, some kind of conspiracy nut? That's what I would have said 7 years ago. Now I've seen it all. I don't rule anything out anymore. Nothing. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Bob in Sacramento, California. Hey, Bob.
Hi there, Tom. I loved your analogy about Bush being a rat in the corner, and I've seen them a rat in the corner, too. I know how they act. And I'm thinking that it is a kind of a last-ditch effort by him, knowing how popular war is with Americans. And I remember when we were first attacking Iraq, how the public was all jazzed by it, and they would say, I heard somebody say this, I'm going to go home tonight and watch the war.
right.
on TV.
The networks had a logo for it and theme music for it. I mean, you know, it was a big deal.
Right, and I think that you could even work with the citizenry, that it might restore some popularity with Bush, because they don't take it seriously, they don't look at it for what it is. Yeah. You know, it's an unwanted and aggressive act against a country with dire results. And even after Iraq, I still don't think that they understand what a bad thing that was to have done to begin with.
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, James Madison, on April 20th, 1795, this is the guy who, you know, the father of the Constitution.
Right.
Said, of all the enemies to public liberty, war is the most to be dreaded, because it comprises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies, and from these proceed debts and taxes. And armies and debts and taxes are the known instrument for bringing the many under the domination of the few. In war, too, the discretionary power of the presidency is extended. Its influence in dealing out offices, honors, and profits is multiplied. And all the means of seducing the minds are added to those of subduing the force of the people. The same malignant aspect in republicanism may be traced in the inequality of fortunes and the opportunities of fraud that grow out of a state of war, and in the degeneracy of manners and morals engendered by both. No nation can remain free in a state of perpetual war.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks for that. And you know, the way the public would respond, and the way the media would respond, they would just eat it up.
I think you're absolutely right, Bob. I think you're absolutely right. And thanks for the call. Anoush in Bronx, New York. Hey, Anoush.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, my mother's from Iran, actually. I grew up here in this country, New York. It was a good analogy. I agree about the rat. There's actually a funny Persian curse. It's Borj Zahrmar. That's what they say about people like Bush and Cheney, which is Tower of Snake Poison.
Interesting.
But I wanted to thank you for your coverage of what's going on with Saudi Arabia and Iran right now, because it's such complex tribal histories there that Americans are so unaware of, and I really feel that's the reason why they were able to get so much support initially on the war in Iraq. And
sure.
We have got to change that now, because if we go into Iran, that is cataclysmic. That is just got to stop. And I just wanted to bring one other thing. I have relatives all over the Middle East, and one of my friends is married to an Assyrian. The Kurds right now, there is no coverage of this in U.S. media at all, and very little in Europe. The Kurds are slaughtering the Assyrian Christian minority up there. It's not, the ethnic cleansing that's going on is not just Muslim and Muslim.
Is this in Iraq, Kurdistan?
Yes. The Kurds are doing that, and this is, I have heard nothing about this.
Which
in
of the
media.
Two Kurdish factions, is this PEK or PKK? I'm forgetting.
I'm not sure about that. I just know that I think because the tensions are so high now and the pressure is so huge on all sides.
Oh, yeah.
that there is long, long histories of problems with the Kurds and the Turks and
Turkey
minorities.
Yeah, and Turkey, for all practical purposes, has said if we allow the Kurds to form an independent state, they're gonna take them out, because they've got their own problem with their own Kurds.
That's right, and I feel that the U.S. media coverage, it's getting a little bit better from what I read in the New York Times, but, yeah. You know, they focus on Ahmadinejad and his anti-Holocaust, you know, just portraying Persians as though they're, you know...
It's
Persians.
A cartoon character. It's turning him into a cartoon character. It's like, you know, when we fought World War II with Japan and Germany, we were fighting relatively, homogenous, we were fighting unipolar cultures, essentially, you know, single race, single religion people. And that is absolutely not the case in virtually any country in the Middle East now.
Okay, first of all, the Jews have lived in Iran for thousands of years.
And still do.
That's right. My mother's Armenian. She's Christian from Iran. And
yeah.
These people existed together. And Ahmadinejad is not popular in Iran.
Yeah. And well, in fact, he just lost big time in a series of elections. And that's something that, you know, should have been played up in our press. But I think that he was doing his whole Holocaust thing as a thing for popular domestic popularity. And he blew it. But Anoush, thank you so much for the call. Good to hear from you. 16 minutes past the hour.
Now,
back to Tom Hartman on the Al Franken Show here on Air America Radio.
Nothing that changes my mind. I never could toe the mark, and I never could walk the line.
And welcome back to the radio support from above by for We the People of the United States of America. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number, TomHartman.com. However you spell it will get you there, get you to our homepage, and click right up in the middle of the top there. You'll see where it says live chat room, and drop in and say hi if you'd like to hang out with some of the finest minds on the entire internet. It's Boxing Day, the day after Christmas. We are live all the rest of this week. And onward into the future. 1-866-440-8466. Charlie in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Charlie, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. It's interesting. I think to rodents' unfair comparison that Republicans get compared to them. If you ever work with laboratory mice, they're actually very nice little creatures.
I recall.
But the top of the first hour, you were talking about Cuba and that movie. And
yeah, the movie being The Good Shepherd, and for those people who didn't tune in, what I was saying is, if you have not yet seen The Good Shepherd, before you go, there's one thing you need to be listening for in that movie, and that's the word Zapata, because the Bay of Pigs operation was supposed to be an October surprise operation that Nixon put together as head of the Cuba Working Group when he was vice president. Eisenhower put him in charge of it in late 59, early 60, and he was going to run it as an October surprise in 1960 to beat Kennedy, and wasn't able to pull it off. And it was called Operation Zapata. That was the Bay of Pigs invasion, and somebody ratted them out. Somebody, and then Kennedy inherited it and had to do it, and somebody told the Soviets when and where it was going to happen. And to this day, we don't know who it was. We just know it was somebody inside Operation Zapata. And the first third of the movie is kind of wondering who that person was. And what most people don't realize who are watching the movie is that at that time, and also it's all about how the CIA was recruiting from Skull and Bones. At that time, a Skull and Bones graduate by the name of George Herbert Walker Bush owned an oil company that never found any oil, but had oil drilling rigs off the coast of Cuba called Zapata Oil. And the two ships that landed with the Bay of Pigs were the Barbara J and the Houston.
Yeah, they also... Interesting is, at the top of the hour, they reported that Ileana Ross Leighton, who chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, has called for the assassination of a charge which she had denied. And when you look at this, it's the type of Republican wrongdoing. First, they do some outrageous act of, then they deny it and lie about it. And it's just, Cuba is such a Guantanamo there, which we shouldn't even have.
Yeah.
And I'd love you to talk about Turkmenbashi, because that nation is right between Iran and Afghanistan. Seems like another site where we might be up to some no good.
It's a whole other show, Charlie, and I guarantee you, I promise you, we will get to it.
Great, thanks, Tom.
Not right at this moment. Thanks for the call. By the way, there's something really funky going on with your phone, Charlie, there. Maybe it was just call waiting. I don't know. Harp in East Hampton, Massachusetts. Hey, Harp, what's up?
Thank you. Hello.
Yeah.
Hi, Tom. Listen, you were talking about conspiracy, and in a way, I guess I'm another one, because I think what happened with the 9/11 towers coming down is just, I mean, the evidence is just so overwhelming, yet everyone treats anyone who thinks that as if they're just a kook or a conspiracist. And I just wanted to ask you about three specific things and see what you say about that, which is, one, no building, no skyscraper in the history has ever come down like that, even though there have been fires worse than that in skyscrapers. Two, three buildings came down on the same day, including Building 7, which was never hit by a plane, never even mentioned in the 9/11 Commission. And so there are, as you know, many, many other...
anomalies, shall we say, yeah.
Yes.
You want to know my take on it? My take on it is, I don't know. And that's the take that I think all of us should have. Lamar Waldron and I spent 17 years researching who killed John Kennedy, finally wrote a book about it that's about 1,000 pages long. It's called Ultimate Sacrifice. And you read the book, you get a sense of the work that we put into this thing to figure out. It is going to take years, and it's going to take some enormous and serious investigations, a lot of work by a lot of people. people to figure out what actually happened on 9/11. And I got to tell you, when we started back 17 years ago writing Ultimate Sacrifice, I was pretty sure that the CIA was somehow involved. I had a whole set of preconceptions. I thought I had it all figured out, and I discovered as time went on, and we started actually interviewing people who were close to Jack and Bobby on the inside, on the outside, in the CIA, in the Cuban movement, all and in the mafia, that everything I knew was wrong, you know, to paraphrase the segment we do. Bottom line is nobody has done any serious investigation of what happened on 9/11. And until that happens, I don't think any of us can claim knowledge. So I just, you know, I think it's really important that we all say, I don't know. Yeah, I think these are all legitimate questions that you're raising. And I'm just, you know, drawing no conclusions. Bruce in San Rafael. Hey, Bruce, I got to take a break here in about a half a minute. What's up?
Okay, quick. I just wanted to mention, whenever you mentioned global warming, stop calling it global warming and call it global climate change.
That was the recommendation of Frank Luntz for the Republican Party about 3 years ago. Why are you saying that?
Because when you say global warming, they can argue against warming because it's not warming everywhere. It's changing.
Oh, well, yeah. But it is. But, you know, okay, I won't disagree with you about the reality of climate change. And yes, it is getting colder in some places. But the bottom line is that the planet has a fever. And it's got a fever that is caused by us throwing carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. It was 280 parts per million 200 years ago. It's 380 parts per million now and going up. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Telling the truth to multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know. You know, here it is, Boxing Day. Maybe it's a good day to take a variation on the old apparent original theme of Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, where the manor houses would box up the leftover food and the working poor would come by and beg for a box of food. And consider boxing up the stuff in your house that you're not using, you don't want, or that you might even, you know, want, but you're not using. And share it with the Salvation Army and the Goodwill and other organizations like that that can pass it along to other people. Anyhow, welcome back to the program. 35 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're live all this week. And next week, Monday, we'll be playing a best of on New Year's Day. But other than that, then we start another year of live programming. 1-866-440-8466. And also this week, this program is also filling in for Al Franken on the Air America Radio Network. We both being syndicated by that network at the same time. Ron in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Ron, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. Good to talk with you.
Good to hear from you, and thanks for listening.
I saw you out here in Eugene a couple of months ago. We certainly enjoyed you.
That was a great evening.
Listen, I'm upset about Iraq and America's apparent desire to do nothing but leave. Leaving is something we obviously have to do, but I don't think we can just keep going into places, stir up a hornet's nest, and say, oops, we made a mistake, and then leave.
Yeah, no, Joe Biden suggested we do is basically the same thing that we did in Yugoslavia, which is divide the country along ethnic lines. Provide people with assistance for resettling where necessary. Basically, do the ethnic cleansing without all the murder. But the Iraqis are doing it with the murder right now. And if we don't start getting involved in that process, look at the 100 bodies a day on average all around the country are being found.
No, that's exactly what we have to do. We have to leave this country in three pieces. It's already in two pieces. Kurdistan is independent. They're flying their own flag, and they'll never go back to being a part of Iraq.
Until Turkey invades them.
if we don't let the Sunnis have Anbar and Salahuddin provinces along with some oil wells, we're going to have a Sunni diaspora with angry Baathists and Wahhabis all over the Middle East from Egypt to Kurdistan.
I agree, and we're already seeing a Sunni diaspora. There are more than 2 million people who have fled Iraq and are living in nearby countries, principally Jordan and Saudi Arabia. Not only that, they are the remnants of the middle class and the upper middle class that were mostly Sunni because Saddam was encouraging and protecting them. And, yeah, you're absolutely right. You're
and guess
on.
Who agrees with us? Kay Bailey Hutchinson.
Oh, really?
The, now, there's a laugh.
The Republican senator from Texas.
Exactly. She wants three countries. We got to do this. If
yeah.
we just pull out, we're going to stand there and watch years of massacre, and the blood is on our hands.
Yeah,
because
no, I,
we
I
made
agree.
It possible for this to happen.
Yeah, I agree. We've done it twice actually in the former Eastern Europe, and I think it's there's really no choice. Joe Biden had it right almost a year ago when he was calling for this. Ron, thanks a lot for the call. Steve in Mountain View, California. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Before I get to my main point, I had two quick comments based upon earlier callers.
Mm-hmm.
One is for Sally. I think she's from Michigan. She should contact Public Campaign about the public financing of elections.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, they're a good group.
PublicCampaign.org, presumably?
I guess that's their website. You can do a web search on
you
the
Google it, yeah.
Public Campaign and find it. And then on being a conspiracy theorist, you know, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
I've discovered that, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, my main point, this comes out of the newsletter of Project Censored, the most recent issue.
Uh-huh.
And they've got this article about the FBI is saying that there is no hard evidence connecting Osama bin Laden to 9/11.
That's correct. He is not listed. He's on their most wanted list, but not because of 9/11. You're right. And you know, Project Censored is pretty solid. I've won three Project Censored awards. Two articles and a book that I wrote have all been the recipients of Project Censored awards. And the book was actually what they did was they took a chapter of it, which ran as an article in Common Dreams. And so I've had three. Over a two-year period, 1 year they did two of my pieces, and 1 year, 2004 they did two of them, and 2005 they did one. So I guess I've won three Project Censored awards. And they're solid folks, you know. University of California, someplace.
It's the Sonoma State University.
Sonoma State University.
It's
thank
not
you.
The University
yeah.
of California
yeah, you're right.
system.
You're right. Yeah, they invited me down to the ceremony in the last one, and Jan Edwards went down on my behalf from Eureka, from the End Corporate Personhood Group, because that was the topic of the article. I was not able to make it.
Well, anyway, I wanted to bring this to your attention, but as always, you're two steps ahead of me.
Yeah, well, I just, you know, I agree with you that, and with the Project Censored folks, that most Americans don't know that. You know, the FBI, however, puts a caveat on that, and that is that they say that the investigative work has not been done. Which, again, gets back to my original point that, you know, we can have a million theories about what happened on 9/11, leading up to 9/11, on the day of 9/11, in the weeks and months and years following 9/11. But until some very, very serious investigation is done, we're not going to have any clue. I mean,
yeah.
We're just going to have a million theories. And I think anybody in this movement, as it were, who says, oh, I've got to figure it out, here's the answer, does us all a disservice. What we need to be doing is calling for more and better and more competent investigations.
Yeah, there's another article in the same issue of the newsletter about Stephen Jones, who's done some research on the collapse of World Trade Center 7 that I think one of your earlier callers referred to.
Yeah, which is, oddly enough, doesn't even show up in the 9/11 Commission report. Thank you very much for the call, Stephen. It's Shirley in Manhattan, New York. Hey, Shirley, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi. It's my pleasure to speak to you and to try to absorb and pass on all your information to my friends, those who want to hear and those who don't want to hear. I tell them anyway.
Well, we all have to be activists, you know. I mean,
right.
If we're going to save this world, we've got to get out there and start doing it.
Right, right. Well, my first question is, how is Mike Malloy, because he's not on Air America anymore, is he still broadcasting?
Yeah, Mike is back on the air. He's being syndicated by Nova M, which is a syndicate that was started up by some of the former Air America folks, and he's, you know, he's on a bunch of stations. Mike's a good guy and an old friend. Mike and I were on IE America Radio together back 4 years ago. He's around.
Well,
MikeMalloy.com is his website. We'll leave it at that.
MikeMalloy.com?
Yep.
Okay, I'll try to.
You can get all the news.
Right, because I'm looking at your picture right now when I download you.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I can't. Every time I hear on the TV or the radio about how the oil companies are making record profits of all the you know, more than this year and last year, they keep making more money. But why doesn't that the American people don't realize we're buying their products and they're making their
profits off of us.
Well, part of the problem, Shirley, is that they've gamed the system. I mean, in 1982, when Ronald Reagan, for all practical purposes, enforcing the law, the Sherman Antitrust Act, and allowed all these giant mergers and acquisitions, and these giant companies got even gianter, and basically we saw, I mean, you may be old enough to remember what America looked like in the 60s and 70s. You could go from town to town, and every town looked different. Remember?
Yes,
I mean,
I'm
you know,
70.
Yeah, okay, the local drugstore was the local drugstore, and the
right.
local, you know, the local restaurant was the local restaurant. The local clothing store was owned in the same family for the last three generations, the local car dealer, and on it went. And now, you can walk into any mall in America, and it could be anywhere. I mean, you could drop out of an airplane anywhere in America and not know what city you're in. You wander around for weeks trying to find something that tells you what city you're in, because they're all Olive Garden restaurants and McDonald's and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And so I think when Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Act, that's when we stepped into this realm, and with media as well, that's when we stepped into this realm where the big corporations so seized control of our economic lifeblood that now, I mean, for example, one of the reasons why I won't criticize Walmart explicitly is because they're simply playing by the game, by the rules of the game.
Right.
We need to change the rules of the game. We need to go beyond criticizing Walmart and start criticizing the law. We need to change the law so that what Walmart is doing will become illegal. I remember living in Vermont and needing to buy a pillow. And the nearest store I could find, that you know, to Montpelier, Vermont, that where I could buy a pillow was like 40 miles away, and it was a Walmart. It's like, you know, oh no!
Wow.
And that's, you know, that's what we need to change. We need to start breaking up these big companies and saying that big companies like Walmart can no longer use the 14th Amendment. They don't have corporate personhood. They can't claim discrimination if communities try to block them out of their neighborhoods and things like that. I mean, they're not persons. They're corporations. There's a difference.
Well, the one solution that I found about the gas prices and everything, I sold my car. I live in Upper Manhattan, so therefore I can take a train, and if I'm going to any place special, then I will rent a car.
Mm-hmm.
And if people start either carpooling or even walking, God forbid, that should cut back a few shekels on what the oil people are
paying. Well, and we'll all get healthier.
Yes.
And our society will get healthier, and we need a major shift to mass transportation here, Shirley, in the United States. And living in Manhattan, you know how efficient mass transportation
is.
People get it, you know, and it's just, it's like, you know, I lived in Europe for a year, and even in rural areas, you can get literally, you can go anywhere, from anywhere to anywhere, between buses and trains.
Right, or bikes.
That's right, yeah, or by bicycles, yeah. There is so much that we can do. Shirley, thanks so much for the call.
Okay, thanks for talking to me.
Good talking with you. There is so much we can do in this country. It would create an absolute renaissance in our use of energy, our use of transportation. It would make the dot-com boom look like an anomaly, like a weird little, that was no big deal. And it could save the world. You just have to get these big corporations out of the way first. 45 minutes past the hour.
Radio with Tom Hartman on the Al Franken Show.
Friends, hang on tight to your dreams. Talk back to the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Lauren Kirshner and Andrew Dunn in New York working this week with us, keeping things going. Louise and I here in Portland. David is, I think he's got the flu. David Poole, our producer, not feeling so well. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. Wayne in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. How you doing? Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I noticed in the Huffington Post today, they reference an article from the Boston Globe that talks about the U.S. military considering foreign recruits.
Yeah, we started the program with that rant about 2.5-3 hours ago.
We are
now thinking of setting up recruiting stations in third world countries and saying, how'd you like to become a citizen? All you have to do is go to Iraq for a couple of years. It's nuts.
What I want to mention is that over a year ago, a friend of mine that I work with is originally from Peru, and he's a U.S. citizen now, but he still has family in Peru, and he sent me a letter, he received a letter, from a niece in Peru saying that she would soon be coming to the United States with her fiancé, who had enlisted in the U.S. Army at the embassy in Peru.
Yep.
And that there was a line around the block at the embassy, the U.S. Embassy in Peru, of young men waiting to enlist in the U.S. Army with the promise that if they did a tour in Iraq, if they lived through it, they could be on the fast track to U.S. citizenship.
It's already happening.
Now, this was a year ago.
Yeah.
I contacted a few people, including Henry Waxman, about this and asked if what they knew about this, and I basically received nothing in response.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if any of your audience or you yourself have any contacts with people maybe down in Lima, Peru, that could maybe investigate this a little further to see if this has been going on for a year.
I doubt. It's been almost 20 years since I was in Lima, so I haven't kept in touch with the folks that I knew down there. We just put it out on the air. We'll see if anybody calls in who has any direct knowledge of it. But it's fascinating, Wayne. Thanks for the heads up. My guess is if it's happening in Lima, it's happening all over the world. But, you know, time will tell. We'll see. Robert in Phoenix, but thanks for the call. Robert in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Tom. I wanted to express my concern that Nancy Pelosi has joined Speaker of the Senate Reid in supporting appropriating money and encouraging the Bush troop surge in Iraq to escalate the war.
Yeah, I think we need to stop using the word surge and start using the word escalate, by the way. And it's just a surge is like a nice euphemism. We're talking about an escalation we're talking about turning an occupation into a war.
Hillary's to the right of Bush on Iran, and it just really scares me that we're going to have a choice between McCain and Hillary come 08.
Well, again, I keep saying this over and over, and I really and truly believe I'm right, Robert, that it's not about the elected officials, it's about us. If enough of us get out there, if enough of us speak out, if enough of us infiltrate the political process, if you show up at the local Democratic Party, if you show up and volunteer, if you help out, if you pitch in, if you get involved, get active, then we can turn this tide around, or this ship around, or whatever lousy metaphor you want to use. It's always, if you look throughout the history of this country, it has always been our elected officials following us, not the other way around. Robert in Duluth, so we need to get active. You need to be an activist, bottom line. Robert in Duluth, Minnesota.
Yeah,
Robert.
Thanks for taking my call. Do you agree that I have a lot of videos on 9/11?
Yeah, I've seen quite a few of them.
I suppose you have too, don't you?
Yeah.
Then do you agree that Building 7 was a controlled demolition?
I don't have any idea. I'm not a demolitions expert, and to the best of my knowledge, no good ones have investigated it, and all of the evidence has been removed. It's part of the problem. I mean, I'll say it again. There hasn't been a good investigation of this, Robert. I don't know.
Well, I know that there hasn't been a good investigation, but the building's video is evidence, isn't it?
Yeah, it presumably would be. And again, I'd like to hear from somebody, not somebody, I'd like to hear from a serious collection of investigators looking into that. I'm not that person. As I said, I'm agnostic on this. I spent 17 years looking into who killed Kennedy. It is never as simple as you think it is. It just never is. Dave in DuPont, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
I'm doing pretty good here this morning. Hey, I've got the... Looking forward to reading your book this weekend, but I've got one that I'm reading right now, and I wanted your opinion on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a book called Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and I think it pertains to what you've been talking this morning. I think without saying it, he says his information points to about a 40-year conspiracy in building this war.
It's an excellent book, and the message is solid, and I know the author, and you know, and I endorse it. It's an excellent book. Yeah. It's also published by the same publisher, my publisher, who published Screwed, or at least the initial version of it was. So I'm right there with you on it. Suzanne in Los Angeles, I have about a half a minute here. Suzanne, what's up?
Okay, Tom, you're a voice of common reason. I want to thank you. I just wanted to say that I think Michael C. Rupert did some good professional investigative reporting on 9/11. I know it's not an official investigation, but it's his investigation presented in Crossing the Rubicon. That
and I think Mike Rupert, you know, and his website is great. He's contributed to this. I mean, there's just like I say, over the years.
Well, he's now in Canada recuperating after being in Venezuela for a while because of things that went on.
He had to get out of town. I know. Suzanne, and I salute Mike. He's done a lot of good work. But, I don't think any of us, I think any of us who claim to say, I have the answer, are just making a huge mistake. There needs to be a serious investigation. Hasn't been one yet. Anyhow, thanks so much for being with us today and every day. We'll be back live throughout the rest of the week here. It's Boxing Day. Box up some stuff and take it down to Goodwill or the Salvation Army. Good plan, huh? Great way to celebrate Boxing Day. Tomorrow, Tristan Emanuel and I will be debating same-sex marriage in New Jersey. And remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.